And I ain't hear no drop in a minute. No, I'm about my business.
This is The Rapper's Guide. You're here with your host, Diggy Metro.
Bales Pagliacci.
And today we have a very special guest on. This guy is a co-founder of AudioMac. He's the editor-in-chief at DJ Booth. Extremely important guy for, I feel like, the culture of digital streaming.
Yes, indeed.
This guy is constantly dropping gems. I don't even know what else to say about this man, because I found him probably a couple years back just tweeting. And I feel like the knowledge that this man drops on a constant basis is one of the main drivers of this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of the reasons that I even got in tune with him as well. When you told me about him on Twitter and I followed him, and I was like, oh, yeah, he really the real deal.
Like, there are two books that we encourage people to read. There's the Donald Passman book, and there's an Ari Hirstand book.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, I feel like Brian Z. Zizook is the person that you have to follow.
Yes.
He's the only person that outside of those two books you could gain the same amount of knowledge from.
Mm-hmm.
Without any further ado, Brian Zizook.
Hey guys, does this mean I get royalties on your podcast?
Hey, oh, yeah. Oh.
First, we have to get royalties on our podcast.
No, thank you so much for having me. That was a beautiful intro. I appreciate it.
Hey man, it's crazy the impact that I feel like you have on online culture of music. I don't think that anyone in your position outside of you, as far as like a blog editor-in-chief, has as much cultural value. How did that happen? How did you start tweeting, and what made you want to drop gems on a consistent basis to where you're just kind of helping people for free?
Well, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think it was really important to me that my own personal brand, if you will, on social media was in alignment with what we were doing at both of my businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It was very important that if anyone saw the name AudioMac or read a DJ Booth article, that there was the link between my advice, my recommendations, my knowledge, and trust. As you're both well aware, trust is something that does not inherently exist in this business. When it comes to record labels, streaming services, PR, management, there's inherent distrust. And so when people read my tweets, I want them to see that as trust in not only me, but in our platforms. And it also aligns with our mission, right? So it's artist discovery and artist education. And so if I can help the community discover new artists and learn more about this rapidly changing business, they should expect to get the same from the platforms with which I am behind.
Now, when you say trust, I feel as though there's almost a misunderstanding of how untrustworthy the business is. I think that there is a level of distrust that people should have for these companies. But at the same time, I feel like sometimes it's a little exaggerated. You probably have conversations with people that are at these companies, at these labels. How often do you feel like they're really that bad?
that is a fair question. Yeah. So perception obviously is not always reality. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a classic case of a few bad apples spoiling the entire orchard.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible for me to make a blanket statement, because there are villains that exist on the label side and there are villains that exist on the streaming side. That doesn't mean that every person who works in either field is an inherently bad or mischievous individual. But those who are loudest about it certainly get a bad rap. On the label side, I think it's obvious, you know, they're using outdated contract structures that simply do not fit the current ecosystem. There's no reason why an artist who's only released two records that got big on TikTok should be asked to sign a 5-album deal.
Right,
they probably don't have one album in them, let alone 5. So, yeah, I mean, that characterization, I think, is completely fair. On the streaming side, I mean, obviously I'm biased given that Audio Mac is a DSP, but the truth is that there's very little control that the platforms have as far as royalty payouts and structure, because the labels and the rights holders largely dictate all of the terms. And so if you want to point the finger at anybody in this space, it's the labels, it's the rights holders. But then you could make the argument on the flip side, well, we're in bed with them. We're doing business with them. So we're to be blamed as well. I get both sides.
But see, and I'm sorry, Bills, to cut you off, but see, like when the Spotify founder or the CEO of Spotify rather came out and had those statements about how artists aren't going to get more pay, and the way to get paid more on these platforms is to make more music and to distribute more. I wasn't so offended by it, only because if you know a little bit about business, I feel like that's something that should be just common sense, you know? And I, what I was telling a lot of artists was, if labels, or rather if these DSPs decided to start paying out more, they'd be more selective about who they had on their platform. And in turn, that would just turn into digital record labels. Do you agree with that?
Well, if they started to pay out more, they'd go out of business, right? So, I mean, first of all, no two streaming services are in the same boat. You have a service like Apple Music, which is a part of Apple's world, right? It's part of their service package, if you will. And so they don't need to make money on streaming as a standalone, because that's not their business model. Amazon Music, it's just an add-on into the Prime universe. Whereas with Spotify, that is the business. Mm-hmm. Tidal, that is the business. If they increased their payout model, they would go out of business. These companies are already not profitable. I understand on paper there is a value there, but Spotify in its existence has never in a fiscal year been in the black once. Mm-hmm. Tidal, through two acquisitions, the valuation has dropped both times. Why? Because the model doesn't work. In terms of Daniel Ek's comments that you referred to earlier, I think they were tone deaf, if nothing else. Like, right. He should not have been the messenger for that specific message.
I agree with that. What is the reasoning that these companies exist if there's no incentive? What is the incentive, rather?
For streaming services?
Right.
That's a great question. I won't speak on behalf of any of our competitors, but I know that specific to AudioMac, and this goes back to what I said earlier, we are about artist discovery and artist education. We're a hybrid platform, meaning we are not full catalog, but we're also UGC, which means that we are not beholden in the same way that some of our competitors are to providing the most valuable real estate in our app world to the upper echelon artists, the 1% signed to the major label. And also artist education. We have made it a concerted effort to do everything from original video content to original editorial content that is pushing people toward, how can I find out more about this ever-changing world that I'm trying to become a stakeholder in? You don't see Spotify or Apple Music investing in educating the artist community. As a matter of fact, there have been several initiatives that they've undertaken to do that, and they've given up on them in short order.
Right.
And I think that's the most important thing that you said. I mean, I remember when you mentioned the music discovery, but the music education portion of it is the one that I find is the most important, because you're not going to really find that everywhere. And I also feel like, for the most part, artists do want to be discovered, but a lot of times they'll go to certain places for like panels, or they'll try to like learn certain things, but they're in a sense trying to get discovered instead of actually sitting there trying to learn or educate themselves and trying to figure out how to implement it for themselves in their own career. Have you found like you've seen that a lot within artists as well? Like, it's more about being discovered more than the education portion?
Yeah, I think that's the spot on analysis. I think we're seeing that not only in the real world, but just as an example of that taking place in a digital space is my Twitter, right? You know, more often than not, I am getting replies that are linked to music rather than questions as follow-ups to a point that I've made in short. It's incredible to me the difference between the artists who will send a DM saying, hey, I just saw this tweet. If you could, can you elaborate on this part or this part? Because I was afraid to ask on the timeline because I was concerned that if you replied as a quote tweet, it might look like I'm stupid. And I hate that anyone feels that way, but you know, that is a fair feeling given the environment of social media. But the other side of that coin is no introduction, no hello, just I get a link to some competing platform and it's like, check out my shit. So that is discouraging.
There's a certain entitlement that artists have, and I don't know where that stems from. I think it may stem from the fact that they see so many of these like big artists who seem like they have these free lives and they're free with their words and they're free with their actions. And everyone now is kind of just loud. So I feel like they see that and they want to be like their idols, but they don't understand that their idols are kind of putting out a persona, that they're not actually that person when they're doing business. And I think that confuses a lot of young artists.
I think everybody's confused.
Yeah, I agree.
That's definitely true.
I think artists are confused. Their managers are confused. A lot of the people who work at the labels that sign them are very confused. For a very long time, it was status quo. The labels wanted it that way. The industry wanted it to be that way. We're now getting back to that point where their belief is that it's status quo, but it's not. The entire world around music is changing at a very rapid pace. So the second that you get too comfortable, it's going to pass you by. And that's why a lot of these digital marketing campaigns that are being engineered by the labels on behalf of these artists are falling flat, because they're not taking into consideration all the changes that we've seen over just the past few years with the proliferation of TikTok. And candidly, there's a fear of getting into the unknown. And for a lot of artists and their representation, TikTok is the unknown. But as someone who co-founded AudioMac, I can say there is no platform in this space right now that will do a better job of helping people discover you than TikTok. And to not even approach it in a very like, let's just try some shit out and see what fucking works.
Right.
It would be a grave miscalculation.
Well, see, when I contacted Bales and my co-host, and I said, hey, we should probably get on TikTok. And the first conversation was, hey, man, we're both pushing 30. Maybe we shouldn't do that. And I was like, hey, like, I'm ready to do whatever it takes to get these podcasts out. I don't care if we look young. I don't care if we, or I don't care if we're using younger methods or whatever, but I've seen some reputable sources say that TikTok is the way to do these things. And we've gained a lot of success through TikTok. I think the one thing that I have a problem with TikTok and with pretty much every streaming or not streaming, pretty much every social media platform is that there seems to be an algorithm that's built for success up till a certain point. Once there's a certain level of success, I feel like there's almost a wall that's put up. And I don't know if that's just a conspiracy, but we've definitely seen that. They've allowed us to gain a certain amount of success, and then it feels like they kind of drop it back a little bit, and then they give us a little bit more, and then they drop it back a little bit. Is there any truth to that? Have you experienced that at all?
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's go back for a second, right? So, during the blog era, as DJ Booth grew in popularity, we built up a Facebook audience that reached nearly 200,000 followers. Now, these are people who opted in. They had to click follow. We didn't force anybody to follow our Facebook page. And Facebook at one point in time was a driver of about a quarter of our monthly page views. At its peak, DJ Booth reached 8 million page views a month. And then seemingly overnight, they made the decision to flip a switch. And then in order to reach that same amount of followers, you had to pay to boost each post.
Right.
Otherwise, you're only going to reach a very, very small percentage, again, of the people who opted to follow you. They Trojan horsed everyone, right? And so we saw the dramatic effects of that. You're not a conspiracy theorist to believe that there is a glass ceiling on all of these platforms, which is why I continue to beat this drum on social media. If you have been fortunate enough to develop a following on any platform, you have to figure out how to take that following off the platform. You need an email newsletter. You need to collect emails. You need to have a strategy in place for the day in which you either can't reach them for the reasons that we just discussed, or they go out of business. What do you do then?
Right.
That means that your followers go out of business with the platform. Terrible situation to be in.
And that was one of the things that we discussed on a previous episode of trying to find a way to take the followers on those certain platforms and find a way to, you know, directly talk to them. Because once again, that time that Instagram had went down and Facebook and everything, I think that was like about a month ago, everybody was went on a limb that everybody was going crazy. Everybody went over to Twitter that was still available. And then they were trying to figure out, like, you know, what do we do when we can't really post to the social media apps and they're down? How am I supposed to reach out to my fans? And it's like, if you had those things in place, whether it be text messaging marketing, whether it been the emails, you would have still had a way to be able to contact these people or stay in touch with them, even though these sites are down, which is something I think, once again, artists kind of don't really think about in those, like, the apocalypse times.
Also, another good point is I think that when people see build an email list or when people see text message marketing, they don't understand what you just said about there being a glass ceiling and how these platforms are only built for you to get to a certain level of success before you actually have to come out of your pocket and pay for it. So I think that they're doing it prematurely. I think that artists do it off the bat when they don't even really have a real fan base and they don't know why they're doing it. But I'm glad that you said that point about how you need to figure out a way to take them off these platforms just in case. I think that that kind of makes it more clear for an artist that's listening right now as to why you should actually build an email list, because it's not just for blasting your music. It's for really like having a direct connection to your fan base. Say these platforms do go out of business or go down or anything.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. There's nothing wrong with utilizing any of these platforms. You should be utilizing all of these platforms. But the goal should be to build up a following on them and then move them off to an email list so that you can keep everyone up to date on what you're doing, so that you can solicit ticket buys when you announce a new tour, so that you can solicit purchases when you do a limited edition merch drop. Obviously, you can promote all of these things on these platforms, but you should do so with the understanding, again, they are either going to limit your reach or not be around forever. And I know that the thought of that seems insane. It's hard for people to imagine a world where Instagram doesn't exist. But I'm sure if you ask people during the heyday of MySpace,
right,
if they could imagine a world in which Tom sold the company and then
went
on vacation.
Yep.
Right. Like, they probably would have said, no, I can't. One final small point to this, to cap off this subject, though. The day that Instagram and Facebook were down, I was on the phone that afternoon with one of our label calls. And the rep told me, my artists are freaking out right now, meaning, mm-hmm. you know, they couldn't access their audience. And so I said, what do you think that they would say if instead of Facebook and Twitter being down, it was Spotify and Apple Music and all of the DSPs? And he paused, giggled audibly, and then said, I don't think they really would care.
I don't think they would either, honestly.
That's crazy.
And that's what's amazing to me is because that's the moneymaker,
mm-hmm.
at least for most artists who are unable to monetize their social following.
Right.
But the inability to connect with their fans or followers would be more disconcerting than knowing that their music is unavailable to the listening public. Crazy.
Well, I think that speaks to the value of music in today's market. I don't think anyone's really making good money off music. There's no physical copies. There's nothing to really sell. You're kind of just hoping that these streams turn into a bigger number and like a snowball effect. And I think that it scares people less knowing that they're making a few
Fractions of a penny.
And I think that for some reason they see more value in these social media platforms because you're able to directly connect with the consumer and sell them, say, merchandise or whatever it is that you're selling at the moment. I think that they find that more valuable. But also, I don't think that many artists truly make music for the sake of, I don't know if it's for the sake of actually being a musician. I think that the music that they put out, I think, is more for the fame factor in a lot of cases. I think that people want that big following. I don't necessarily think, and I think that even big name artists, like say like an ASAP Rocky, where he comes in and he takes the world by storm, and then he kind of goes away and goes into the fashion world, mm-hmm. and he starts doing all these outside things. And I have to constantly speak to artists and say, like, maybe some artists aren't fully passionate about music. Maybe they saw that as their outlet because they were good at it, but then they wanted to drift into stuff that they actually were passionate about. And I think that's why maybe artists won't be so hurt if Spotify or Apple Music went down.
Yeah, you make a lot of salient points. I don't think that any artist who uses music to do something that they're more passionate about should be apologetic. Music as a stepping stone into other ventures and big business is not a new phenomena. So I don't think that any artist who does it in the social media age should be frowned upon. Also, I think if you were to ask 10 artists, as far as like how motivated they are at various stages of their career, they're never going to be more motivated than at the point when they're trying to become a household name. Mm-hmm. And then when everything that comes along with that ascension has arrived, for a lot, it becomes stale. And that's why they have to constantly seek out other things to bring them back to music. Rocky, for instance, to go off of your point, he hasn't released anything in a few years since his last album, Testing, which was critically panned.
Right.
But he's preparing new music now. So, you know, you can make the argument he needed some time away. He did a lot of non-music stuff. I believe he was an actor, a producer, got into fashion, scratched all of those itches itched all those scratches, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm,
and now he's back.
Right. I think that to your point about people finally getting to that that mission and then not really like knowing where to go with it. I think that I don't know if you're into the boxing world, but Tyson Fury is someone who he said that very, very elegantly, how he got to a certain point where all he was focused on was fighting Klitschko, who was like a 10-year heavyweight champion. And once he beat him, he went into a serious depression because he felt like there was no further. He felt like that was the goal in his whole life. And he felt like now that that's accomplished, I have nothing. And I think that a lot of artists don't have a game plan going in. I think that their game plan is to make it, but they don't think about what comes after they make it. And when mm-hmm. when you don't have a plan after you make it, sometimes that could turn into something horrible because mm-hmm. you're sitting there going, all right, everything I've ever dreamed about, I've gotten. So now what? You know, and I think that that happens, whether it be in sports, music, you know, maybe film, that happens all around. You get to a certain point where you go, all I ever wanted was to sign a record deal. Now I have it signed and I don't even want to make music anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was the end goal.
Which normally happens sometimes too. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to constantly reassess your goals and give yourself a new focus. I do believe, to your point, that for a lot of artists, signing a record deal is the mountaintop. But once they get there, they don't have the same motivation that they had in the pursuit of the record deal. When in reality, that's when all the real work starts.
Right. Yeah.
Not to mention, I don't think a lot of artists are prepared to sign record deals. I'm not at the stage of my career where I've built up enough leverage to justify making this business decision, but rather they don't know the amount of work that comes with it. I think there is an assumption based on the story being told by artists on social media and through interviews that you're entering the situation where now all you have to do is sit back and relax and focus only on the music, and you have a million people at your disposal in every avenue who are just going to do all the rest of the work for you. If anything, when you sign a record deal, if you are not one of a handful of priority artists at your label, you're going to have to work harder than you've ever had to work ever before. And you're going to have to make all of these people who work for the label understand your vision and get on board. That in and of itself is a challenge. Someone can sell a car that they wouldn't drive home from work that day. But if they're also driving that car, they're going to be able to sell it way better. Now imagine having to convince, you know, 25 digital marketing folks that you are the next it. Good luck.
Right. And to your point, I feel like when it comes to artists making it and then kind of losing their drive and their passion with the label being involved, I don't think that they understand that the label is now going to be the gatekeeper for what you're able to focus on or what you're able to work on. That freedom that you had prior, where you could just work on anything that came to your mind. And if you wanted to do a trap song today and then a boom bap song tomorrow, once you get in that label door, whatever was the most successful is what they're going to push you toward. And sometimes that could throw an artist off, where the label is telling you, hey, we only want product like this. And you're like, but I also enjoy the other thing. And they're like, no, you know, and I don't think artists consider that when they're thinking about a record label, because all they're thinking about is the money portion. Mm-hmm. And the money portion is cool. And for a lot of people, it's life changing. But is it worth that lack of freedom?
I don't think the record label in 2021 is going to flat out say no. I think they're just going to deprioritize. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in the day, the label would do a lot of testing, and that still exists. Like, you know, we see that all the time, where they won't call it a single. They'll call it like a focus track or a buzz record, just throwing it out there. You know, if it takes off on one or more platforms, then they'll put a little more juice behind it. It's essentially the same process. But the label does want you to be focused. They do want you to go down one particular path until you've reached the point where you're The Weeknd or you're Drake, and you could literally do, you could go down every path and it doesn't matter. People will follow you. They won't explicitly tell you, well, no, you can't do this. What they will say is, all right, yeah, go ahead, try it. But they're not going to market it. They're not going to put any effort behind it. And if you think about a label roster, like a spreadsheet, and every line on the spreadsheet is a different artist signed to that roster. Let's say you were number 8 before, but now you've chosen to, instead of doing something more rhythmic, doing something more street or trap, but they already have 5 or 6 or 7 other artists who are doing that exact same sound. They're just going to move you down the spreadsheet. So instead of occupying flat number 7, now you're 22. So every week when that rep hits up every single platform and says, hey, these are our priorities for the week, try to find some editorial playlists for them, you're at the very bottom of their email. It would require the platform to scroll down like 9 times to find your name. They're not even going to know that you were releasing something that week. So yeah, that is the more likely outcome. But either way, it's not a good position to be in.
And I wanted to basically switch gears a little bit and in a sense kind of talk about AudioMac. Because I know a lot of people, when they think about streaming platforms, they always go to the Spotify, Apple Music. Usually those are the main two. And when it came to AudioMac, I wasn't really too familiar with it until randomly I've seen like a few New Jersey artists. They were posting that they were like getting on these playlists and they were basically like being in the top category for certain like editorial playlists on AudioMac. And like, what does AudioMac kind of bring to the table for artists? I think you had mentioned it was kind of more so like a community, which I've also seen, like when you're able to gain followers and also be able to follow similar artists and also rank those tracks. Do you feel like that's like the strongest suit for AudioMac, or like what it really brings to the table as far as the streaming platforms?
Well, first of all, welcome. Better late than ever. So glad you've arrived. I think what we've done, which has been very smart, is to ensure that the artist community is essentially an extension of our marketing team, right? And how do we do that? So we have chosen to celebrate every milestone. For a lot of artists, the idea of getting onto like a rap caviar, right? That's just not attainable. And for anyone listening here who is a rap artist who is trying to get on a playlist like Rap Caviar on Spotify, if you are not signed to a major label, you're not getting onto that playlist.
Exactly.
Right? Okay. So with that in mind, how do we change the perception of success, right? How do we celebrate every milestone? And so what we've done is we've set up automatic notification whenever an artist reaches a certain threshold of success. So that could be 100 playlists added. That could be 1,000 plays. That could be 5,000 plays. Every time you're added to a new playlist, you get a notification with a custom shareable graphic mm-hmm. that you can then throw onto Instagram or Twitter announcing that you've been selected for trending or added to this playlist or reached 10,000 plays.
That's huge. Behaviorally,
we're trying to change the perception of what success is so that as you grow, hopefully your followers and fans on these platforms grow with you. They're going to celebrate these wins, these smaller wins as well. And then when you achieve the bigger wins, right? The top 10 placement on a huge editorial playlist, possibly even on a competitor, the AudioMac. Mm-hmm. People saw that growth. They were a part of the journey and they celebrated each step along the way. And let's be real. I could tell the both of you or anyone on Twitter who follows me how great of a platform that AudioMac is, but you're going to believe it far more when one of your creative peers, who either you aspire to be or you see yourself as, is championing our platform on social. You're like, wow, it's working for him. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. And I even seen within like DistroKid before, like it wasn't an option, but now it's like whenever you upload a song to DistroKid, it also gives the option to upload your music to AudioMac. But I was like, oh, this is definitely beneficial. It's like they're also starting to pay more attention to AudioMac. It's like, okay, this is definitely an option for artists. But I think a lot of artists don't tend to think about AudioMac a lot of times, but I definitely wanted to touch on like, why is this so important? Because like, once again, we look for those accolades from these social platforms. And you know, apart from Spotify, that probably gives you the greater than like 1,000 on your page. It's like, there's not really anything that kind of gives you that big up, like, oh, here, this is what you can show to your fans. You kind of have to do it on your own. So it is also good that your guys' platform is able to give that to artists. Because I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what we really are looking for.
And what is it that you would say to someone that compares an AudioMac to being like a newer version of SoundCloud? Have you heard that before? Because I've heard that from a couple people. And I get where they're coming from, but I do think that there are different features on an AudioMac that are different from a SoundCloud. So what do you say to someone that calls it a new SoundCloud?
I say I completely understand why you're saying that, right? SoundCloud, like AudioMac, is not full catalog, and it is hybrid with UGC, which is user-generated content for any listeners who aren't familiar with that abbreviation. So on its surface, I completely understand. What I would explain to that person what I have explained when I've heard this same comparison made is everything that we do is beneficial to the artist from the infancy stage of their career till they take off. And what I mean by that is SoundCloud currently, they will charge you either annually or monthly for access to analytics, unlimited storage, and a lot of their quote unquote premium features. Mm-hmm. We do not charge the artist community for anything ever. And so when you sign up for an account, you can gain access to your creator dashboard that has all the advanced analytics. You can find out where your streams are coming from. Are they from playlists? Are they from trending? Are they from search? You can find out where geographically people are listening to your work. To gain access to those types of robust analytics on SoundCloud, again, you're paying for it. There's no limit on the number of songs that you can manually upload, nor if you have a feed distribution partner, i.e. a distributor, are we charging you for having X number of songs on your profile. So mm-hmm. for instance, if you're prolific and you like releasing a new album every month, by the way, I would not endorse that plan. That's way too much music. That's fine. You can do that. And the milestone graphics and notifications, like I mentioned earlier. And so we're not charging artists for anything. You can only make money on our platform. You can also monetize directly on our platform. So let's say you're pre-distro, pre-label, but you're taking your craft seriously and you would like to earn royalties for your streams. We have AMP, which is the AudioMac monetization program. As soon as you become authenticated on the platform, meaning very basically you are who you say that you are, and you've achieved low barrier to entry thresholds, so a limited number of followers on the platform mm-hmm. and number of original works uploaded to your profile, you can apply to monetize your work on the platform. And you can't do the same anywhere else. So yeah, these are just a few of, I mean, I could go on, but I don't want to hijack your podcast and make it an audio Mac advertisement. But yeah, to answer your question, that is what makes us different.
But I think that definitely beneficial, because I did see like how, as far as like how can you become, I'm not exactly sure what you guys called it, but it was like, it wasn't like something that was like so hard to obtain. I think it was like a certain amount of followers. It's like, all right, it doesn't seem that that unattainable to get. I just have to put a little bit of work in on the platform and just also network. Because I think that's also one of the things that we fail to do as artists, is that we'll go on these platforms trying to be discovered, but we don't use it as a tool to network. Or try to, you know, find another artist that may sound similar and try to collaborate. And, you know, two great minds is always better than one. So I think that's definitely something that's beneficial and something that, you know, artists need to definitely take.
Is there a messaging platform on AudioMac as well?
Oh man, I can't go into too much detail about this because we haven't even soft launched it yet. But we are on the verge of launching a parallel app for the creator community, which will encompass what you just mentioned, as well as so much more. If we had only been taping this a month later, I could spill the beans.
Well, I'm so happy I just asked that question to get one gem. All right. I wanted to ask you about, Z, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. I wanted to ask you about the blog era, and being that you have your hands in a DJ booth, and you were there for the height of the blog era, that's now transitioned into the social media and DSP era, digital streaming. Do you think that blogs still hold weight in the game? Do you think that artists who are trying to reach out to blogs, because I'll be real, DJ Booth is one of the few blogs that hasn't turned into The Inquirer. And I don't know what happened with that.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, right? So, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier, right? So Facebook Trojan horse, the entire industry, that was one of a number of factors that led to ultimately the downfall of blogs being able to remain successful in this space. You saw the proliferation of social media as well, right? The idea that anyone would be willing in a non-bookmark desktop website setting to leave their preferred social media site app and then head over to a website or blog, read an article, and then go back to social media. Like it's just one link click, but for many, just behaviorally, that was something that was just too hard to fathom. Wait, so you want me to leave where I want to be to consume this content, but then I can't have a conversation about it. Or no, I'll just go back to where I really wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And that's what we saw happen. We would post links to our articles on our Twitter, and the engagement of the tweet would be insane. But if you were to, you know, peek under the cover to get an idea of, are these a one-to-one match with the number of people who are actually reading the article? They were. More people just wanted to engage with the limited text in the tweet, mm-hmm, than they were to actually convert them over to becoming readers. And so for all of those reasons, yeah, we did see a demise of, in particular, music and hip-hop blogs. It did change the approach of the publications and the blogs, to your point. It became less about the music and more about the rumors headline and gossip and celebrity news and all of that. It was, you know, who is this person dating, or, you know, who shot who,
right?
And not, you know, they have a brand new album out and it's incredible. Let's talk about the music. And so, yeah, I would have shut the lights and closed the door on DJ Booth before we would ever have gone down that path to remain in existence. So I will say this. I feel really good about the fact that we've been able to remain viable with our partnership with AudioMac to continually produce content without ever having to touch that space.
Yeah, I that makes total sense. The limited text thing and the reason why people are just strictly posting those important, or not important, but those hyped up headlines that are going to reach a bunch of people on social media. I never put two and two together with that. And I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't. But that makes total sense as to why everyone's kind of the inquirer now, and everyone's posting that hot headline that's, oh, Kim K was at Fashion Week. You should check this out. And you're like, this blog used to post really good music and actually care. You know, so I could see it from a business standpoint why they would drift toward that. I just don't understand how they don't feel like they lost credibility. Or maybe they do. And they just, it's just business.
The business model just changed as far as like what's the content going to be. And it was one of the things. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, a lot of them got bought, right? And so I don't think that there's any guilt on the part of the original owners or creators or publishers or editors, because those people have long been removed from those platforms. You know, just as one example of many, a couple of years ago, Warner Music Group purchased Hip Hop DX, which is, in my opinion, a legacy publication. 100%.
Yeah.
And so Warner's involvement basically guaranteed two things. One, editorial decisions were going to be based around profit. Otherwise, what's the point of getting into that space? And two, it would ensure that their artists, so any artist signed to Atlantic or Warner Records or Asylum or who distributes through their ADA, that they would have real estate on the platform. And so right away, you know, all right, if I'm reading this publication, it's content that they believe is going to make them money or is going to promote their priority artists. And that's fine. That's what happens when one of the three major record labels purchases a publication. But you have to go into it understanding that and not like, oh my God, where is the organic content on right. this platform? It's nowhere to be found. Well, did you know who bought them?
Yeah.
Then it shouldn't be a surprise.
I think that if you have a business sense, you understand that. But I think that for a lot of artists who are looking toward these blogs as the reason that they woke up and the reason why they fell in love with hip hop in the first place, because a lot of, you know, we come from the era right before that. So like we were around for music magazines and stuff yeah. like that, that there were these publications outside that actually did have some, I feel like credibility when it came to like their passion for hip hop. But I think when you're a kid who grew up in the blog era and those outlets did the same thing as like a Source magazine or XXL back in the day, I think now you're kind of, I don't know if it's disheartening that every, you know, you guys again are one of the few blogs, I can't even name many others that still have some type of credibility or it feels like, you know, they have dignity. And I think that a lot of people don't know to look under the covers or find out who bought these companies. So to them, it's just like, wow, man, look what happened to hip hop. You know, or look what happened to music. It just completely lost all value.
Yeah. To that, I would say if you're an artist listing and maybe you have been fortunate enough to get a few blog placements and or you're currently in pursuit of blog placements, they're not going to help you sign a record deal. So get that out of your head right away. But if you are trying to get value out of it, I would view it as I'm going to play the long game. If I can get 10, 15, 20 blog placements that are more than one line of text and an embed link, try mm-hmm. saying that 10 times.
Right.
and over time, this will help me build up my brand through Google, meaning when people look for me, they find impressions.
Mm-hmm.
that aren't just my website and my social media, that could help you with booking, just as an example, right? So if you try to find a booking agent, they're going to do a cursory Google search. You hope that the first thing they find is your website and all of your social media. But then after that, what they should find is any reputable blog or website or publication placement that can't hurt you. That shows that there is interest in some corner of the internet in your work. And so that would be my takeaway is while I wouldn't spend too much time pursuing them because they do have low value in 2021, they're not valueless.
Right. So it's more or less for your SEO at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
And we also wanted to kind of go back to, like, you know, some of the things that you're tweeting, because once again, if you are an artist listening, definitely go follow Z on Twitter. But I know, like, a lot of times we talk, like, a lot of the topics that we may have on this podcast, you know, we say these things and sometimes you may come off as, you know, these guys are just nobodies. They're not really sure what's going on within the industry. But I know a lot of tweets you were, like, recently talking a lot about cover art and how important that is. And as far as, like, the whole music landscape and how you are discovered as an artist. You wanted to add on it to anything as far as, like, the cover art, like, what's the importance of it? And artists should artists be, like, really focusing on that?
Well, first of all, I don't care what anyone says. The two of you are far from nobodies. I love the content that you produce. So anyone who's ever said that, fuck them.
I appreciate you. Talk that.
As far as elaborating further on what has become a weekly series that cover art does indeed matter, I will say very simply, I think artists are overwhelmed. I don't think. I know. The artist community is overwhelmed. They're expected to be thoughtful and creative and deliberate with their art, while also making all of these decisions that exist around the art, knowing that they have to put a plan in place to display the art everywhere. I'm just overwhelmed based on what I just said. I can't imagine having to put all of that into practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so what typically ends up happening is something like cover art or publicity photos, right? The photos that exist on social media and on DSPs to show your face, they become afterthoughts. And what artists need to realize is we're now in a predominantly visual ecosystem, meaning people are only going to give your music a chance if they like what they see first. Everyone's scrolling really quickly, whether it's on a DSP or on a social media app. And if something doesn't catch their eye immediately and they weren't already familiar with you, they're not going to press play. And so the best chance that you have to get someone to stop scrolling and to press play, or at the very least, click over to your artist's profile page on a platform like an AudioMac or a Spotify, is to have a visually stunning, interesting cover art that critically is indicative of what someone should expect when they press play. Because there's nothing worse than seeing a cover and then finding out very shortly that the contents of that book have nothing to do with the cover.
Right. And that's exactly what we said last time on that episode. We definitely talked about that. It's like, yeah, you open it up. It's like, okay, this is not what I thought it was going to be from this cover.
Right. And then you stand to lose that person forever, right? There's just too many artists. There's too many choices. And even outside of music, right? What you're essentially competing for now is the free time of the consumer. And so that's not just with other artists. That is with social media and streaming video and politics and porn and video games and the whole nine. And what do all these other things have in common? The visual component is what drives their success. There's a reason why, and not to belabor this point, that at the very beginning of the pandemic, when everybody was home and they had the choice to either stream music or stream video, they chose video. When people are doing nothing, they choose video. And there's a reason. Because for most, music is a passive listening experience, meaning it accompanies an activity, your commute to school or work, working out at the gym, playing sports, cleaning the house, whatever. For very few, it's, I'm just going to press play on this record, and that's all I'm going to do is listen to the music. We saw that back in the day, right, when you actually had to get up off your ass, take a vinyl out of its sleeve, and throw it on a record player. Right. That became an active experience. Now streaming is completely passive. And so it's less popular than other options as a result of that. And so how do you force users to become more active? You engage them through visuals. I know that we went so far around the question that you asked, but the context I think helps, hopefully will help artists understand why it's so valuable.
No, it definitely helps. It definitely brings like a full picture to everything. Because once again, I know like a lot of times artists will always like, I need to get on this playlist. I need to get it on this playlist. And they don't really understand that you can get on that playlist. But for the most part, people are like passively listening. They're not like really fully actively listening. They may be doing something else. And, you know, people will try to build a fan base off of or just build their numbers just based off of, oh, I need to get on this playlist and everything's going to be okay. But it's like, yeah, but for the most part, people are probably doing other things and they're not really paying attention to you as an artist. So it's probably not the best way to go about that.
But even with the playlist, like you said, if you have a good cover, you might stand out even in that playlist. You might be the one that they click on first. If they're not just hitting shuffle, yeah, you might be the one song that really brought them in only because they were scrolling down that list and they saw that cover that popped out to them. So that's another good point as to why a cover could be important. And I think that, you know, a lot of artists lack in that category because for the most part, you know, I don't think a lot of musicians are graphic designers. And it's kind of sad that in this day and age, musicians have to be graphic designers, but a lot of people are coming from the struggle and can't afford, you know, art for every single song that they want to drop. Because if you want good art, it comes at a price. And I don't think everyone has the money to pay for that, you know, so it kind of sucks that everyone has to be everything. You have to be a music marketer. You have to be a graphic designer. You have to, for a lot of people, mix their own music, record it, write it. It becomes a very taxing sport. But I also think that if you're capable of navigating it and doing it well, I think that that will kind of help you on that voyage to success in music. Definitely. Z, can I ask you a question just about the overall success of a younger artist? What is a big mistake that you see young artists doing on a regular basis?
I think the biggest mistake that artists make is that they release music without a plan. Just throw it out there and let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. Having no plan is not a plan. And so what I would encourage all artists, this is not just, you know, your independent artists, but also artists who are maybe signed to a label and frustrated and are trying to get out of a deal perhaps and are releasing just to fulfill the terms of their deal, have some sort of strategy in place. And having a strategy in place doesn't mean having to require a massive budget. There are plenty of things that you can do leading up to a release and following a release that cost little to nothing. I also think it would be advantageous for more artists to put more of their resources, both creatively and financially, in the post-release basket. And so I beat the drum about this on social all the time. Unless you already have an existing fan base, I would not release a full body of work. I would focus solely on releasing songs to procure an audience. And then once you have an audience who you know is already interested in your work, then you can feed them a larger body of work, which safe to assume that they would take the time to digest.
Hey, Z, can you say that one more time for the people in the back? I just want them to really understand what you just said. Can you say that one more time a little bit clearer?
Absolutely. Unless you have an existing, and I should add, dedicated fan base, don't worry about releasing a full body of work. Focus on releasing songs. Don't even call them singles. Singles, just like album, the word album creates unnecessary expectation. You're just releasing songs, you're growing a fan base, and then once you have that fan base in place, at this point, safe to assume, based on the numbers, like there would be interest in more than just songs. Perhaps they would want a full body of work. Then you can deliver it to them. And in that event, what is best to do is limited marketing up to the release. So I have this album coming out. Here's a song off of it. Here are other components creatively, of visuals, a contest, what have you. Album's out. Now I'm going to go ham for a good 5 to 6 weeks. Multiple videos following the release. Consistent branding across every platform. At that point, if someone finds your work, instead of saying, well, I'm so glad you found it. Album's coming soon. I'm so glad you found it. And here is a link to listen to more. So you can capture their attention in that moment and then activate them to becoming either, you know, a larger fan or from a follower to a fan. Without having anything more to offer them at that point, you risk losing them permanently. And then they might not remember that they liked you enough to come back to you.
Because once again, we're competing, you know, for a lot of attention. And once again, all those things you said, as far as like politics, porn, gaming, all those things, it's like when you do when you are able to captivate somebody for that specific time, you want to be able to try to keep them there as long as you can, or just make sure that they kind of, you have a lasting impression on this person, that they remember you. And I think that's kind of like a lost art, where it's just like, you know, people may give their, oh, I like this album, I like this song, and then people don't really captivate on that. They just kind of let them just kind of go away. And it's like, you probably just lost this person forever. They're going to find somebody that's new, and then they're going to be focused on that person for that time. And hopefully the next person they go to is able to keep them there because they have a plan put in place.
Well, beyond just the plan, we also talk about a recurring theme on this podcast has been building your catalog. And it's speaking to what you're saying right now. But a recurring theme has been building your catalog before you really go the route of, and you can market during that process, but to have a catalog in place, that makes sure that when you do drop a new single and a new person finds it, they go to your page and there's not only two other songs that they could listen to. You have a good 15 to 20 songs 50. that they could sit down and actually process. And now in the course of them listening to those, say like 45 minutes to an hour worth of records, now they might be a fan. You know, it's hard to become a fan off of 4 minutes of content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's just be real, right? I mean, if you release an album, who's actually listening to the entire thing? If that's the first time that they've ever heard of you, right? It's not happening. I remember listening to an interview that Russ did. And by the way, I think Russ gives incredible interviews. I know he gets plenty of shit on social media, but he gives incredible interviews.
No, he's very important as well.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of, there was a period of like 4 years where he was releasing two projects or albums a year, and they weren't helping him. And he got to the point where he realized, after scanning, you know, 30, 40, 50 SoundCloud pages that had albums on them, that after track one, the play counts dropped precipitously from track one to two and then three and so forth. And so behaviorally, he saw people are willing to press play, but if you don't immediately grab them out of the gate, the likelihood that they stick with you all the way to the end is slim to none. And so he completely changed up his game plan. And instead of releasing albums, he just released a song a week, every week, for, you know, a year or however long he did. And that was the catalyst to his current success. And that was years ago. But despite all the changes that we've seen in his business, that has not changed. People's appetite for your content is limited. And you should know it's limited going in, because again, there's other things that they need to do. There are other things that they want to do, but there are only 24 hours in a day. And if you're in school or work, that only gives you 6 to 8 free hours to spend the rest of your time. Mm-hmm. So use it accordingly.
I think that was a great cap to that.
That's definitely
for sure. And I think that I think artists are going to gain a lot from that point. You know, I have artists come to the studio constantly, and they're working on their first album. You know what I mean? And again, they have no fan base, and it's not to knock them. You know, but I think that a lot of people go based on a old method.
Yep.
And they're thinking about how music was when they were younger and how it processed. And they don't get that, like, every 5 years or every 3 years, this game changes entirely. And the methods that you use have to change with it. You can't just use old methods because that's what you're used to. And I think that that's the biggest thing that artists have trouble with. And yeah, I also think that there's part of it is like ego, as far as everyone thinks that they're the next big thing. So they're putting together these projects that they think are going to land. And because they're so good, people are just going to gravitate toward them. Like, yeah, maybe that doesn't work for other people, but I'm better than everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it's just how the business works. It has nothing to do with you in particular. It's the business. I think that you could be the most prolific and skillful artist of this generation, and if you don't have a fan base starting off, when you drop an album, it's going to do the same as something that you would consider bad.
Yeah, I agree completely. I know art is art, and art is not sports. Although you could make the argument that athletes are artful in their particular practice, but there's an evolution that has happened in many sports, but in particular basketball, right?
Right.
The mid-range game is dead, right? Now, that's not to say that you can't be successful shooting long twos. Shout out to DeMar DeRozan, brand new Chicago Bull, who's killing it. But the reality is either you're trying to dunk the ball or you're shooting from behind the three-point arc. Why? Because that's where the game is right now. In a streaming world, the game has... You guys still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
In a streaming world, the game has shifted from releasing full bodies of work to releasing songs. Songs get placed on playlists. Playlists are what is editorialized and given the most time and attention by these platforms and stores. And so that's not to say that you can't release an album or that you shouldn't release an album. But if your goal is to get more fans to listen to your work, the vehicle to get there as an independent from the jump is not a full body of work.
Right. It's almost as if you're wasting that many songs. I feel like because people's appetite and attention span, as well as the fact that you haven't built a real audience, is so short, I think that you're just wasting content at that point. Like, mm-hmm. what is the purpose of releasing, say, even an 8-track project, if by the time that they get to track 4, they already lost all attention and they're not going to listen to 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8? There's no real purpose. I mean, you know, I understand that people want these cohesive projects and they want something that speaks to their whole life. And there's a certain value and importance that goes behind making an album for most people. But I think that that's where the business side needs to come in, and you have to have a business mind as an artist. And you have to understand, like, although it might speak to your story and it might be something you've always wanted to do, when it comes to the standpoint of gaining an audience and becoming a household name, it's not going to really succeed in this current day and age.
Yeah, and I don't think that the leaders, by leaders I mean like the more popular artists in this space, are doing anybody a great service here, given that, you know, the Drakes and the Kanyes and the Migos of the world have in recent past released very long, bloated works. Oh. And I think the younger artists see that and go, well, they're trying to game the streaming platforms. They're releasing 23 to 30 song projects. So I could do a 12-track record and that'll be fine. Yeah, but they already have the built-in audience from years of service in this business. You don't have that. So emulating the greatest and most popular artists in your industry, if you don't have that audience, isn't a viable path forward.
And I think that's the confusing part, because a lot of times you'll even see like local independent artists and they'll release an album and then there's like, oh, I got a deluxe album coming. And it's just like, where is this even coming
keep
from?
Keep it.
Yeah. Like,
yourself.
Yeah, like exactly. Like, where is this deluxe album? Like, we really don't even want to see the deluxe albums from the bigger artists. It's like, why would you think, just because you see the bigger artists doing it, you want to emulate it? But it's like, it doesn't really work that way. It's
See, going back to sports, I mean, there's definitely fifth graders right now that are pulling up from half court because they see Steph Curry and Dame Lillard do it.
Yeah.
It happens all around. Now, I would tell that fifth grader the same thing that I would tell an artist working on an album with no fan base. I would tell them like, hey, I understand that you see like the greats doing that and you see your idols doing that, but that doesn't mean it's good for you.
Yeah, get a little
like,
closer.
Right. Like, you can't reach if you're heaving. And a lot of artists are heaving out these albums.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're shooting these albums from half court and they're airballing. Because there's no actual audience there. You know what I mean? And that's the hard part for people to comprehend. You know, everyone thinks that because the biggest guys do it, that means it's the right way. But they don't comprehend all the work that went in before they got to that point of who they are. And you can't start where they are at currently. You have to start where they started.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, even if you were to look back and see where they started, the game has completely shifted since then. So how they started their whole path to success isn't going to be the same as how you're going to start your path to success. It's completely different.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that you know, artists can take away from this episode that Z was basically hitting on in the beginning. It's like, this business is constantly changing, and it's like, you can't get stuck on one mindset of what the game was and just continue to try to pursue it and then wonder why things aren't working. Like you mentioned TikTok, you know, when we see that now that they're at 1 billion people that they're like, I think it eclipsed YouTube as far as, you know, keeping people's attention as far as video goes. At that point, it's like, yeah, you can continue to post things on YouTube and you can continue to post things on Instagram, Twitter, but you'll be doing a disservice to yourself from not posting on TikTok because you're taking away that natural engagement that you could possibly be obtaining just because it's like, I don't want to do it that way. And
just to off that point real quick, I think it's important that we dispel some false notions, right? So as large as TikTok has grown, and they are indeed a behemoth now, the discovery that's taking place on their platform is actually driving its users away from TikTok to catalog DSPs in search of the full-length version of the song that they found on TikTok, right? So TikTok is driving traffic, if you will, to Spotify, to AudioMac, to Apple Music, because that was the entry point. Now they want to hear the full version or more. To the album point, right? No, who? There's no rules anymore, right? Who's to say you can't just release songs for weeks or months on end, and at some point cobble together a portion of those and a few new ones and call that a project or a mixtape?
I've been telling people to do that for so long. I actually, Bales was one of the few artists who listened to me when I said, what's the difference between you dropping a song a week for 2 months and then combining all the songs into your album than just dropping an album with the same amount of songs at the end of that 2 months? I said, it's the same concept, except now you're getting constant engagement and you're giving people something new every week. And they're going to, by the time that it hits that album, they're going to already be following you. They're already on the road with you.
And that's what literally drove my career to where it's at now, like to a certain point, just having that whole mindset of, let me just release it once a week. And at first, you know, artist mind, like, no, I'm going to just drop the 7 EP. I don't care. I'm going to just do a 7. But then, you know, when you hear certain things from certain people, you got to kind of think of it. Does this person have my best interest at heart? Which Dig did, because I did it that way. And the rest was history. Now I'm actually starting to see growth within my career. I'm actually starting to see engagement and fans. And it was all kind of based on that model. Like, let me just release constantly at a point where it's like, I can definitely probably release like a 7 EP or what, you know, whatever
it's
the case may be now.
It's an album, but now it would be considered an EP because every song is like 2 minutes. But
at that point, it's like, now I have an actual fan base that are actually looking for it and they actually want to hear the music. So it's like, it's not like me just shooting into the air at that point. I could still miss, but it's more of a target. I might actually touch the rim this time, you know?
Right.
First of all, congratulations. It's got to feel wonderful to know that you've deployed a plan of action and that plan has yielded success.
Appreciate you.
I think that you're welcome. I think that that's probably got to be the most discouraging part about all of this, is artists, whether they have a plan or not, are constantly failing because the nature of this business. It's ever changing. It's different today than it was a year ago, than it was 2 years ago, whether we had a pandemic or we didn't have a pandemic. And so the second that an artist or any sort of creator feels like they figured it out, right? This is the blueprint. Everything changes again. And so that's gotta be frustrating. That's gotta be confusing. And for anyone listening going like, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, he's not an artist, I can tell you as a platform owner, as someone who worked through the blog era and in the ever-changing publishing landscape, I know exactly what it's like to try to figure something out and not work out and have to go back to the drawing board continually over and over and over again. I might not write or record, and trust me, you don't want me to do either of those things. It would sound terrible, but I get the plight because I've been on the same path myself.
Z, I think that that's the perfect ending to this episode. I want to tell you how much we both appreciate you.
Definitely
for doing this. You didn't have to. And the fact that you did, it just speaks to your character. It speaks to who you are as a person. And we very much appreciate you taking the time out of your day to actually spend it with us and talk on our podcast. I hope that at some point, we could all link up and do a second episode in person so we could get a video of everything and we could chop it up face to face. Is there any last things that you wanted to say before we get out of here?
If you have not already downloaded and installed the Audio Mac app, you should do that immediately. If you're someone who consumes music, I guarantee you'll possibly find your next favorite artist. And if not, you will really truly appreciate the human curated nature of our platform. If you're already familiar with Audio Mac, thank you so much. If you're a creator and you don't have your music on Audio Mac, you're going to want to get it on there. You follow me on Twitter. I'm at DJ Booth EIC. And thank you both of you, not only for the invitation to be on the podcast, but also for the very thoughtful questions. I've done a lot of these, and they're usually the exact same questions over and over again. And so it was very refreshing to not have to give one of my canned, oh yeah, I answered that 5 months ago answers. Thank you.
Right. Hey, man, listen, we appreciate you for being on the show. And once again, I think it comes from us being, you know, artists. And even though you may have the same play, I think that's a lot of things that usually people that may, you know, ask these questions may not be actually in the artist space themselves. But once again, that's one of the biggest things that we do bring to the show, because we want to speak for the artists that are out there listening and trying to figure this thing out just like we are.
Well, that's very clear. Thank you guys again. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Z.
Appreciate you, Z.
All right. And that's another great episode. Again, guys, we're trying to get people on this show that you could learn something from. And honestly, if you look into who Z is, if you have not followed him on Twitter yet, if you don't follow him on Instagram and you don't know who he is, please, 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 every artist out there, go follow him, because this guy is one of the most important people for you. For the digital streaming era, there's no one more important posting online, whether it be the stuff that he retweets or it's the stuff that he posts himself. There's no one more important than that guy. And I'm telling you that from the standpoint of someone who's read all the books. I do all the research, and we come here and do episodes for you every week. And I'm telling you, that guy is extremely important to the success of your own music. So please go follow him. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. We tried to tailor it so that it wasn't just some interview about how he became who he is. Mm-hmm. Although that's nice to hear. They've been done before. You can go watch those on YouTube. What we were focused on was getting answers for the artists at home who are listening right now. So we hope that we were able to accomplish that for you.
And I just wanted to, once again, just piggyback. Go follow him on Twitter, because honestly, the things that he retweets sometimes from other people that's within industry, and there's these long-ass, thoughtful threads of, like, messages on messages on messages that's all complete, like, intricate details within the music industry, within how things are working and how things are being kind of moved in certain ways. And there's a lot of information on there. And once again, like he said earlier in the episode, it's not all about being discovered. It's about the education portion, which is the reason why we drive this show, like, so hard. It's the education, because the education is what's going to be able to help you build you to the place that you want to be and get to those heights that you want to see. And if you feel like you're stuck or you feel like you're stagnant, it's most likely you're missing a piece that you're not really focusing on. And, you know, you got to be able to open up your mind to want to educate yourselves and really get in there and try to figure out shit for yourself. You know, we can try to spoon feed you these things, but once again, if you lead a horse to the water, you can't force the horse to drink it. So always be mindful of that.
All right, guys, this is The Rapper's Guide, episode 40. We are signing out. This is Diggy Metro.
Bales Pagliacci.
Peace out, guys.